This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. It's Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. We were brainstorming new names for the weekdays the other day, just, you know, because it's the Trump era, right? So it'd be Martial Law Monday, Toxic Tuesday, Worst Case Scenario Wednesday, Thought Control Thursdays, and Effed Up Fridays. I don't know. We're gonna call it Anything Goes Friday today. And so, you know, whatever topics are on your mind, we can have a conversation about. Harvey Kay is gonna drop by in our second hour. Today is the, I believe, 70th anniversary? No, it's gotta be more than that. 75th anniversary, thank you, Sean, of Franklin Roosevelt rolling out his Five Freedoms speech, his second Bill of Rights, his new Bill of Rights, which includes. It's amazing to think about this. 75 years ago today, the President of the United States said that education for all, including college education, should be a right and not a privilege. Health care for all should be a right and not a privilege. And a job that pays well enough that you can actually raise a family without going into debt should be a right and not a privilege. And that all of these rights should be guaranteed by virtue of government action. And, you know, for 75 years, billionaires and right-wingers have been fighting this tooth and nail. And so far have held it off. There's a number of things in the news, too. I just want to bring you up to date on a few things here, and then we'll pick up your phone calls. A historian from Yale University, Timothy Snyder, this was almost a year ago, back in May of 2017, well, half a year ago. Timothy Snyder is the author of Black Earth, The Holocaust as History and Warning, Bloodlands, Europe Between Hitler and Stalin, and his new book, On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century. He's an award-winning historian. And Chauncey DeVega interviewed him for Salon magazine at salon.com. And you can read this. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. He said, we're still, this is what this historian, I mean, you know, he has watched the rise of populist fascists all around the world and written about them. And he said, we're still at the stage here in the United States where protest is not illegal. We're still at the stage where protest is not lethal. Now think about that for a minute. You know, if you lived in Egypt or Turkey or Brazil, in large chunks of the Middle East, in fact, the vast majority of the Middle East, if you try to protest, you could die. The Philippines, Duterte kills his political opponents, calls them drug users. He goes on to say that you have to accept that there is a time frame. Nobody can be sure how long this particular regime change with Trump will take, but there is a clock, and the clock really is ticking. It's 3 years on the outside, probably a year, before Trump throws or stages a coup and overthrows democracy. Could the state of emergency associated with the wall be something that, I mean, something that these guys gamed out in advance, that they planned this, that this is actually part of a plan for a coup? Jon Favreau, the host of Pod Save America, a former Obama speechwriter, he tweeted out yesterday, he says, I'm pumped for the next Democratic president to use emergency powers for a Green New Deal to resolve the climate emergency, Medicare for all to resolve the public health emergency. By the way, those two emergencies are actually killing people. And the new Voting Rights Act, a democracy emergency. Interesting. I guess that's making lemonade out of lemons, but, you know, do you think? William Barr, this is a BFD. William Barr is the gentleman that Donald Trump wants to make his attorney general. William Barr was attorney general once before. He was attorney general during the George Herbert Walker Bush administration. George H.W. Bush had been part of the Iran-Contra scandal, and he had a diary, a political diary, that documented it. And Lawrence Walsh, who was the independent prosecutor, had subpoenaed that diary from George Herbert Walker Bush, President Bush. He wanted it. And President Bush at that point was like, he was like, you're not going to get it. And Walsh was going to court. Now, the context in which he was able to subpoena this diary was that he was in the process of prosecuting for actual crimes Caspar Weinberger and five other people who were former officials in the Reagan administration. This all goes back to Reagan's deal with the Iranians. You hold the hostages so Jimmy Carter loses the election, and I'll sell you weapons. Walsh at the time said he had, quote, evidence of a conspiracy among the highest-ranking Reagan administration officials to lie to Congress and the American people. So Barr, who was then the Attorney General, this is the guy Trump wants to make Attorney General, Barr advised George Herbert Walker Bush, the president, to pardon Caspar Weinberger and the other five people that Lawrence Walsh was investigating. It would be the equivalent of Trump right now pardoning Manafort and Cohen and, you know, Papadopoulos and just the whole parade of them, right? And once there wasn't anybody left to prosecute, Lawrence Walsh couldn't continue the investigation. He didn't have a hook to hang it on. And he didn't have the evidence he needed to prosecute H.W. Bush. I mean, this is amazing. And Trump now wants to make this guy Attorney General? He's going before Congress next week for his hearings. We'll see if Noah Feldman's piece over at Bloomberg, senators ask William Barr about his pardon strategy, you know, gets much attention paid to it. So there's that. Social Security, this is, and you know, talk about a crisis of democracy. This is the kind of guy that Donald Trump has put in charge of the Social Security Administration. The acting associate commissioner at Social Security, at their Office of Strategic and Digital Communications, a guy named Robert W. Patterson. Before he did this, he was a right-wing talk show host, a commentator. He worked for two anti-gay organizations. He advocated for conversion therapy, something that the American Psychological Association calls abuse. And here's the most bizarre one. He was part of this, as being part of this radical anti-abortion group, he was also anti-contraception. This is a guy running Social Security now, or part of the senior management of Social Security now. He said that we should ban condoms because condom use deprives women of the remarkable chemicals in semen, and that semen-exposed women perform better on cognitive tasks. These are the geniuses that Donald Trump has brought into our government. It's amazing. Anyhow, as I said, it's Anything Goes Friday, picking up your call. Scott in Alameda, California. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I wanted to put a bug in people's ear about Michael Cohen's testimony next month.
Yeah. It's going to be in 2 weeks, right? February 7th?
The 7th.
Yeah.
There needs to be questions put to Michael Cohen about his relationship with Sean Hannity and the Fox News Network.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's talking about questioning about Trump, but Hannity is the untapped gold mine here, and the channels, the fact that Bill Shine and Fox News seems to be running policy here, that would be a no-brainer as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Scott.
And I don't think there's any kind of attorney-client privilege, because Hannity said on air that Cohen did very little for him. It was nothing big, and he's kind of surrendering attorney-client privilege, I think. The other thing is, can I just say this? Mark Warner yesterday on the other night on Rachel Maddow's, I think, was scandalous. He admitted that they knew nothing about the stuff that came out in the Manafort filing.
That Manafort was sharing polling information with the Russians, you mean?
Yes, they were absolutely clueless about it. This is our representative on the Intelligence Committee in the Senate. They had no clue about it. Why did they have no clue about it? Because I don't think Mark Warner's working hard.
I don't think it's that. I think it's that Mueller's keeping his own confidence. He's keeping his mouth shut. And B, any of the Republicans who knew about this were not going to tell a Democrat. I mean, you know,
I think it's scandalous.
Yeah.
I
get it. Your opinion is registered, Scott. I think that this thing is about to explode. And that's why Trump is trying to position himself to have emergency powers. I mean, this may be a whole hell of a lot more Machiavellian than it just looks at first blush. It's 16 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program, helping you win the water cooler wars.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of your calls in just a moment. It's Anything Goes Friday. And welcome back, Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, Dr. Tom. Mitch McConnell and 20 other Republican senators will be up for re-election next year.
Yep. I think, actually.
Sir?
I think it's 22 in total.
Yes, and there are 12 Democrats, you know, here in Alabama, which is Republican. We might even lose Doug Jones. But what I'm thinking about is the fact that when these senators are sworn in, they take an oath to uphold the Constitution. And I don't see Mitch McConnell doing his job. And I think he has violated his oath. I don't know if Kentucky has a recall law. Here in Alabama, ours was thrown out and considered and written up as void, and we can't recall a senator. But if this continues on, next week is when these people are going to find out, these poor white Republicans who support Trump, they're going to find out that they're not getting their federal housing checks, they're not getting their SNAP cards, and the school lunch program runs out of money next week. And a lot of people don't understand the school lunch program also provides breakfast for those very poor children. So that means that these people are going to have to come up with the cash to feed their own children.
Yeah.
And when they understand that this is a Republican policy, this was done by the Republicans before Trump took office, and before, you know, during the first year of Trump's presidency, all of these programs were ended. And so I don't know how these people, you know, like one of my neighbors used to get, she's 85, she used to get $129, now she's getting $15. And so I don't know how much this is going to affect Trump's base when they realize that all of their federal programs are now gone. And, you know, because these, I personally, I guess I'm prejudiced, but I look at a lot of these people as being uneducated and ignorant. And so they have been blindly following the Trump banner. And now they're going to find out that these Republican people that they have reelected, including, you know, Tom Cotton is one of them, Louisiana, Mississippi, Texas, all of these southern Republican states that blindly follow Trump, they're now going to get hit pretty hard.
Yeah.
And people need to make sure that they have someone to put on that ballot next year.
Well, Mitch McConnell is going to be 78 years old when he's running for reelection. And it may well be that he doesn't intend to run again. I mean, his wife is a multi-millionaire, Elaine Chao, who is in Trump's cabinet right now. She, you know, her family owns this shipping dynasty.
And yeah, she was born in Taiwan.
Yeah, yeah. And
so does she still have dual citizenship?
I don't know. But, you know, my point is that I think that it's entirely possible that he's going to simply retire. And that he just won't announce that until the very end, because once he does, he becomes a lame duck and his power is diminished. And Mitch McConnell is all about anything, if not power. I'm sorry.
Do you remember our discussion years ago about the definition of treason? And I said that anyone who willingly, knowingly, and deliberately does that which hurts the United States or the people should be charged with treason. And you said, we can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're there, Norma.
I think we are, too.
I think you were prescient. But and what boggles my mind is how the media is not calling out Mitch McConnell. They just will not call out Republicans. You know, Mitch McConnell could pass the bill that passed the House yesterday, or that passed the House last week. It would pass in a minute in the Senate. It already passed unanimously on December 19th. He could pass
for re-election.
Yeah. Well, see, that's why I think he doesn't care. I don't think he's going to be standing for re-election. But all these other senators, yeah, you're right on, spot on. And we need to hold them to account. Norma, thank you. It's 21 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. John in Jeffersonville, Ohio. Hey, John, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, I have a situation that happened, and then I'd like to, you know, make my conclusion on it, and then I'd like your comments. And I did a deep dive on the Reverend Barber's sermon out of South Carolina, and he was talking about the three reconstructions that we've had in this country, and he goes back into the Rutherford B. Hayes whenever they did the 1877 compromise and how, you know, they pulled out the troops out of Louisiana and South Carolina in order to let the South do what they wanted again. And then it goes up into the Plessy versus Ferguson, you know, separate but equal. And
yep. That was 1899.
After I did the deep dive, after I did the deep dive on all that stuff, it just broke my heart. I mean, just to sit here and think about where we're at as a nation and what all, you know, where things are. And basically what the conclusion that I came up to is people who are racist, if we can identify that are racist, we need to just basically not remove them from our life, not communicate with them and not have anything to do with them and shame them. And that's the only thing I know how to deal with the racism that we're experiencing.
Well, and I agree, John, and I think that the good news, as it were, is that if you look at the popular genres of you know, homemade YouTube videos made with camera phones, you know, phone cameras, is that, you know, we went through, first it was the, you know, cops killing unarmed black people, mostly men, and then it went to people behaving badly, you know, shouting racist stuff at black people by and large, trying to have a picnic or whatever it may be. And then it moved to, in the more recent version of this, and we've been seeing a lot of these in the last year, is basically white people yelling back at other white people for being racist when they misbehave in public. And so, you know, the genre is evolving, and I think that it's evolving in a way that reflects a broad consensus in America, or at least with, I think, the majority of Americans, along the lines of what you just laid out, John, that Americans are saying enough already. We, you know, yes, we have racists among us. We are not going to tolerate them anymore. We are going to call them out. You've got even, you know, the guy who was the founder, Gavin McGinnis, the guy who's the founder of the Proud Boys now. In his neighborhood, his neighbors have signs up that say "Hate doesn't live here," and you know, suggesting that it does live in his house. And he and his wife are threatening legal action against them. They're freaking out. They're going around door to door begging people not to do it. I mean, you know, he's saying, "Oh, the Proud Boys is just a fraternal organization. You know, it was just a joke. I'm not even involved with them anymore." I mean, even the big time racists are being taken down. So I think, John, that we're moving in the right direction, frankly.
It's just heartbreaking that you can hate somebody you don't even know for just the color of their skin. It just, to me, it's inexplicable.
Yeah.
I just don't get it.
It is breathtaking. John, thanks a lot for the call. Al in Beverly Shores, Indiana. Hey, Al, what's on your mind today?
Yes, I wanted to talk about horses and sparrows. I loved your article. Can we take it back to the Grant administration?
Sure, but let me just, Al, before you continue, let me just tell people what you're talking about, because a lot of people are going, huh? When Ronald Reagan rolled out trickle-down economics, the idea of trickle-down was presented as new and novel, but it actually wasn't. Back in the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s, as the oligarchs were basically taking over America along with the Industrial Revolution, they started promoting this idea called horse and sparrow economics. And the whole idea was, you know, back in the day when there were a lot of horses, people knew that the sparrows loved to pick the undigested seeds, grain, out of the horse poop that was all over the streets because everybody rode a horse back in 1870. And so what they suggested was that if you feed the horses more oats than they normally need, they will poop more oats, which gives more food for the sparrows, which is going to cause the sparrows to be fat and happy and grow in population. So therefore, we should do the same thing with rich people. Give them more money, and they will then, you know, poop that money on the rest of us. Reagan, it was, you know, pee on us and tell us that it's raining. And, you know, thus we'll all become richer. Back to you, Al.
Yeah, I strongly agree. I also think that Grant got a kind of a bad rap because he just didn't know how to deal with the oligarchs.
Yeah.
Nobody had to deal with them before, and he, you know, it was a brand new situation.
Yeah, this is Ulysses S. Grant, who, as I recall, was elected president in what, 1872? Or was it?
No.
74.
It was 1868.
68, okay.
Because remember, Johnson was impeached.
Oh, that's right.
Over,
yeah.
And then Grant took over as the following president, 1868,
yeah.
And then went 2 terms.
Yeah, then got reelected in 72. Yeah, and Grant also, I mean, if you've read his notes, his biography, and you know, his notes on the Civil War, I mean, he was a brilliant Civil War tactician and you know, military guy, but he was also a severe alcoholic. And that was the problem that really, really hurt his administration, was that he was drunk most of the time while he was president. And it eventually killed him. I mean, you know, he died, as I recall, of mouth cancer, didn't he?
I don't recall that. But what I do recall is I've read a whole number of anecdotes about his deep moral commitment
yeah.
to the people of America.
Yeah. Well, you just don't know. You know, Al, I'm not a scholar of Ulysses S. Grant, but I have read a good chunk of one biography. But, you know, it's fascinating stuff. Al, thanks a lot for the call. I gotta move along here. It's Anything Goes Friday.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
We'll be back at the other side of the break with more of your calls on Anything Goes Friday. What's on your mind? Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. Joe in Cupertino, California. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to just throw out real quick that this weekend in my state, that what is it, at Democrat.com, or I think it's ADEM, is the vote for your positions on the local boards in California. And I think in mine, I just put in the zip code and it told me where to go, what day, what time. Anybody's interested in supporting progressives for, you know, the upcoming election. That's my 2 cents worth on that. But
cool.
I thought maybe we'd have Roe on today, but I guess he's
going to be on Monday.
Okay. Well, he was really eloquent in quoting Wellstone in this rebuttal to this difference between Mark Pocan, the progressives, and his position along with the other three, where, you know, he just says, if you don't believe in something, then you don't see it through. You don't merely believe in it. And I thought that was really eloquent.
Yeah.
But I did call to talk about impeachment. And I'm scared because I see a lot of this going on. Everybody's talking about the border and all this. But, you know, I'm reading this article, and I don't want to really go into a lot of detail that Dana Milbank talks about. The time is for the Democrats to be grown-ups and to start the process. There is a very wisdomed congressional representative out of California named Brad Sherman and another gentleman from Texas, Mr. Green, and they've already filed. It's House Res 438. And, you know, it just gets the ball in the Judiciary Committee to roll. It gets to the point where, you know, by a year, let's say from now, we are actually taking that vote. Now, you got to start the ball rolling somewhere. But I wanted to just politically weigh this as we're sitting here and the government shut down. In 1981, I was a Coast Guardsman, and Ronald Reagan did the same thing. I almost lost my car because it was, you know, $165 a month. But there's a lot of people that are being impacted in millions of ways that you can't even imagine. There's no health insurance, like you say, potentially for somebody on cancer treatment. That's terrible.
Yeah.
But if we start this now, I think it may force the House, Mitch McTurtle, to show himself. I mean, he's just standing there behind everybody else, and he's not taking responsibility. If the grounds for impeachment are filed in the House of Representatives, the government continues to be shut down, he's going to have to get with the president, and he's going to have to get with his other Republicans, Lindsey Graham, and say, what are we doing? Because we're going to come for them next. I'm just, that point where I think if we continue to wait, you told me, or you said the other day, it's like when you take your kid grocery shopping and you don't tell them no. Well, I have two of them. One's in middle school. And if you don't tell them no, they just walk all over you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what Donald Trump is getting set to do. I think comparing him to a child, the other comparison I made was a dog. You know, if you feed them from the table while you're eating dinner, you know, your life is going to change.
And no one's ever stood up to the guy.
I know. And it's probably in his whole entire life. And it's not just that it's time to stand up to him. It's that he is moving us in a direction which is inconsistent with the democratic ideals of this country. There's just, you know, it's...
Well, yeah, maybe I was proud to hear Nancy Pelosi say it's un-American to build a wall. You know that,
yeah.
Right? It's un-American.
Yeah. No, it doesn't reflect our values. It absolutely is. It's Soviet. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Very well said. Jim in Poway, California. Hey, Jim, what's up?
I'm doing good, Tom. Question for you. Are we living through the quote Yogi Berra, it's all over again? In other words, are we living 1984 where Eurasia's our friend and then Pan-Asia's our enemy? And are we seeing the same thing? Is this the White House's plan to keep us distracted?
Yeah, it's deja vu all over again for sure, Jim. This is, 1984... Wow, it's been 25 years or thereabouts since I read it. The last time I read it, I was in Australia, and I was trying to read myself to sleep at night because of the jet lag, and I kept getting these horrible dystopian nightmares from reading 1984. It's a really dark book. And the thought control stuff, I mean, that really started in 1984. It started during the Reagan administration,
absolutely,
where they started telling us that, up is down and blue is green and, on and on. It went on to steroids with the George W. Bush administration, and now we've got it in a big way with the Trump administration. There's a little bit of Animal Farm going on, too, here, if you want to use, Orwell metaphors. But, we've got to bring this country back. We've got to restore sanity, we've got to restore democracy, and we've got to strip some of the powers out, particularly the war-making powers that have just been handed on a plate to the president, particularly since 9/11. Although, presidents have been abusing these powers ever since Harry Truman did in Korea in 1951. So this is serious stuff. I would say to any young person, if you want to understand the importance, the consequence, the prophecy of George Orwell, read 1984. Jim, I got to run along, but thank you for the call. Sabrina in McKinney, Texas. Hey, Sabrina, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
I want to get your opinion about what I'm thinking. There's this talk about this wall and that kind of thing. I honestly believe there's more to it than what they're telling us. We've got a high deficit and the old trillions of dollars. And I'm thinking that, I don't even know if they can even pay those federal workers. I work in an insurance industry. A lot of folks call us because they've had benefits with their jobs, and all of a sudden they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to call us so that we can sell them benefits, and they have to pay for their own benefits. They think it's only happening to them, but we're getting these calls from everywhere, and it's happening in a lot of places. So I think slowly but surely, they're pulling the rug from under us. And Trump is the host for the 1%, and Trump is carrying out their mission. He's got the tax thing done. That tax deal done. So, and I don't have a clue about why he's so adamant about this wall when most of the people in America don't want it. And so I'm thinking there's more to it than that, why he wants so much money and it's not going to be enough money, So, I'm sick of both parties, Democrats and Republicans,
Sabrina, I think the Democrats are waking up and making a comeback. I am hopeful about the Democratic Party. Yes, basically since the Reagan administration, the Democrats have been just rolling over and going along, which is really unfortunate. But I think that we're seeing some changes. But, that said, to your question of what is the end game here? Why is Donald Trump willing to go to the wall for the wall, go to the mat for the wall? I think the answer is that he wants to declare a state of emergency, and he needed to create a crisis around which he could have a state of emergency. And, it's not a false flag operation. It's just a totally phony flag operation. And once he declares an emergency, I think he thinks he's going to have powers that could prevent him from being prosecuted or prevent his family members from being prosecuted. I mean, that's where I think this is going. We'll see. Sabrina, thank you for the call. Well said. Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Remember years ago when I pointed out to you that when the United States is in a state of emergency, the president can suspend the Constitution?
Yeah.
You at the time, you thought that was unimportant. Do you still think it's unimportant?
No, I think it's very important, Ed. I really do. There was never a time during the Obama presidency when I thought Obama was going to, you know, seriously mess with the Constitution in ways that had never been seen before. Donald Trump is doing that on a virtually daily basis, Ed.
Well, back in 1981, when I heard that story on the radio, I was in the Air Force, and I said, someday that's going to come back and bite us. And I'm pretty sure I was right about that.
Yeah. Yeah, you absolutely were, Ed. Ed, thanks a lot for the call. James in North Hollywood, listening on KPFK. Hey, James, what's up?
Yes, thank you. I love your show.
Thanks.
I read an article the other day about low birth rates in most states across the country, except for Utah and North Dakota. And I'm thinking that a lot of this has to the racists and Trump supporters really has to do a big part of it has to do with just being afraid that minorities are going to take over and that people of color are going to be taking over. And what do you think about that?
I think you're right. When Robert Patterson, who is now, you know, one of the senior officials in the Social Security Administration, Trump put him there, a former right-wing commentator, when he was out there saying that we should ban condoms, or at least people shouldn't use condoms, because it's so much better for women to get that fluid, shall we say, that it actually improves their cognitive function. The subtext in my mind of the whole anti-birth control, setting aside the Catholic dimension to it, but there's a huge right-wing anti-birth control movement, and it's associated with the white supremacy movement. It's basically they're opposed to birth control for white people, but the fact that our population isn't growing at a fast enough rate, and this made big news yesterday, the day before, that much like Japan, their population's not growing at a fast enough rate for replacement. I think that's good news. When I was born in this country, there was only 130 million people in the country. There's 340 million now. We did just fine back in 1951. Also one of the things that you learn is that as population declines, assuming that you've got some sort of reasonable division of wealth. Wealth is more equally distributed. You've got, fewer people fighting for the same resources, and so everybody gets a little richer as population declines. There are, dislocations that have to do with young people being available for work, and that the net effect of that is that it drives up wages. Again, I don't see that as a bad thing. If you look back at the Black Plague, the bubonic plague, the Black Death that hit Europe in the 1400s, as I recall, the 14th century, the 1300s, that killed off a third of the population of Europe, which created such labor shortages that working people were able to demand really huge wages. And the consequence was that they stopped working 60 and 80 hours a week and stopped being serfs who were owned by their employers and started becoming independent workers. This was the first union movement, the Masons, one of the very first movements, unions. And the consequence of that was the Renaissance. That was when people had enough spare time to do poetry and literature and music and art. And there was just this explosion of those four things and other, positive, culture-positive things. And it was all the result of a decline in population. So I view population decline as a good thing. And James, but I think that your point is spot on and absolutely right. Jack in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Jack, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I called you a while back because I had been suspended forever from Twitter because I sent a Twitter directly to Megyn Kelly saying, basically, "Dear Miss Kelly, your use of blackface on Halloween is as painful to African Americans as it would be if someone were to call you," in quotes, "a blonde bimbo." And she evidently complained and got me thrown off forever. So for several days, I kept saying, "Hey, I wrote a dissertation on metaphor. I'm an expert. It was a metaphor." And I linked them to my dissertation on academia.edu. And I never heard a thing.
Yeah.
And then I said, "Well, I don't think Jack Dorsey has a constitutional right to control a conversation on a totally public media."
Actually, he does, Jack.
Well, I know, but yeah. I said he shouldn't. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And therefore, I am now searching for fellow suspendees to start a class action suit against Twitter. Voila, next day, I'm reinstated.
Wow, that's interesting.
Furthermore, I have not been controlling myself. I have been, you know, tweeting out things that, like President Mueller, things
Whoa,
like that.
You can't use words like that on the air, Jack.
Sorry.
I am sorry. I've got to dump that, and we're going to go to a break.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Okay.
Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Be right back. It's 48 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Apologies. I think you guys, hopefully, you were all able to block that obscenity out. And if it got through, my sincere apologies. Barbara in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Barbara, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
Well, hello, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you, Barbara?
Well, my ankle finally healed.
Oh, that's good. That's a definitely good
forever,
thing.
But I got it done.
Yeah, that's why.
You know, there are three people, persons. Caligula, and if I got it right, Caligula used religion to kind of get his people on his side.
Okay.
I'm
not a scholar of Caligula. You know, the closest I got was watching that old porn film, so. And I only watched half of it. So.
Yeah. Well,
it wasn't that good.
He used religion to let his people know, because Christians were getting killed like flies.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm not going to do this no more, so blase, skippy.
Yeah.
We have Adolf Hitler.
Mm.
Who conjured his and cajoled his people into believing, I'm going to rescue you, I'm going to save you, I'm going to do this for you.
And we're going to create 1,000 years of peace. Yes.
Yeah. Now, there's two kings that you might can tell me more about than I know. King Lear and Hamlet.
I don't know more about it than, you know, I performed in one of those plays in high school, and but that's it. I mean, you know, was all just
lines. They both were like Trump is right now. Trump is in a dilemma that he put himself in.
Yeah.
See, here's what what's really bothering me, and I do watch MSNBC. I have certain people that I do watch on MSNBC. I watch Joy Reid, Rachel Maddow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the daytime people are like, the Democrats need to capitulate.
Yeah, well, that's the daytime people are Republicans.
No. Donald Trump said over and over and over and over, who's going to pay for the wall? What does this crowd say? Mexico.
Right.
Who's going to pay for the wall? These people cannot pay their bills. I'm on Section 8. My rent won't get paid this month.
Ouch. Ouch. But if you think that Nicole Wallace doesn't still support, you know, oligarchs and privatizing Social Security.
Nicole Wallace is full of crap.
Yeah. Let's be careful about our language here. But yes.
But I'm not, you know, I would never do that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Because, you know, this is sort of people have to listen to their children, listen to the show. Come on now. People watch your mouth.
Yeah.
Really. Come on.
Yeah,
I understand that.
So the we just have a few. We got about 25 seconds here, Barbara, before we hit a break. What's the bottom line of what you're saying? What's the point?
The bottom line is the thing when it comes to the wall is a farce.
Yes.
Donald Trump knows he's in trouble. They're investigating him. This young gentleman is fixing to go to the Congress, which now, thank God, is run by Nancy Pelosi. And he's fixing to tell everything. And Donald Trump knows that his children are in deep trouble.
Yeah.
And we, America, have to suffer for it.
Well, and this is what concerns me, is if he declares a state of emergency and acquires new powers, he might use those powers to bail himself and his family out of trouble. And you know, I'm betting, Barbara, that conversation is going on in the White House between Trump and his lawyers. You know, how can I stop this thing in its tracks? And that's not a good thing. Barbara, thank you for the call. It's great to hear from you. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back, 52 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Wesley in Concord, New Hampshire. Hey, Wesley, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you doing? Happy New Year.
Thank you. Back at you.
Yes, I have a question. I'm hearing about this war and 800,000 Americans out of without any paycheck. The question I have is, one, the Republicans control both houses of Congress and the White House for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. If the war was so important, why did it not give Trump the money for the war?
That's a very good question, Wesley. And it raises the question also, was this entire thing a setup?
Because, yes, based on my thinking, if they didn't give Trump the money for the war for the last 2 years, it looks like a setup because it makes no sense.
Yeah.
They control both houses and the White House, and they never built the wall.
Yep.
So as soon as the Democrats took over power, and then all this started happening.
Yeah.
So, and we were told that Mexico was going to pay for the war. Secondly, I see that in a very short period of time since Trump came to power, all the white supremacists have come out from the woodwork. The question I have is, in heaven, if there is a heaven, is it possible that when we go to heaven, there will be a separate quarters for the white people and a separate quarters for the colored people?
Hmm.
Or there will be a separate quarters for the rich and a separate quarters for the poor?
Yeah.
You see, we have so much in America, but if you look just across the border in Mexico, in Haiti, people are starving to death.
Yeah.
The question is God to be blamed, or we are to be blamed because we have everything that we need here?
Yeah, no, I'm with you, Wesley. And if you're asking that rhetorically, I think it's a great rhetorical question. In as much as it points out the silliness of the whole thing. If you're asking it theologically, Jesus was pretty unambiguous. He said rich people can't go to heaven. It's easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to go to heaven. Wesley, great stuff. Thank you for the call, Sam in Stockbridge, Georgia. Hey, Sam, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hey, man, I've been listening to the show for about a few months, man. Appreciate it. I have two questions dealing with Christianity. One is dealing with Jerry Falwell, because I was reading an article from what he said when an interview on the Washington Post of him. He was saying about, one, that a poor person never gives anybody charity. But then again, Jesus gives poor widows put more than all the others. And another thing, right, he was saying that it's immoral for anyone to not to condone Trump.
Yeah,
and I'm just real concerned about it because Jerry Falwell. Because while I was looking for cool and college, I'm a Christian like you are as well. I'm more central politically wise. I like to listen to multiple sides, critical thinking wise. But I'm really glad I didn't go to Liberty because of how it's messed up free speech in a way.
Yeah,
and how is a bad representation of Christianity.
Yeah, Sam, my sense of it is that, and this is just purely my own personal opinion, that Jerry Falwell is not a Christian, at least not a Christian who would be recognized by Jesus or even Paul, that he's a hypocrite. And then I think he's also in big trouble right now. He and his wife were down in Florida at this resort a few years ago, and he met this very young, I think he was 20, 21-year-old pool boy that he apparently fell in like with. And within a month or so, he's flying this guy around in his private jet all around the world. He's raised $1 million for him to start a business. The business that he's started is something that's got to do with a hotel where they rent rooms by the hour and have a largely gay clientele. And, you know, I think Jerry Falwell has got some splaining to do, you know, my sense of it is that he's hanging on to Trump as a way of, trying to get away from this problem that he's facing.
Yeah, I understand that. But my thing about this is concerning is how can we save Christianity in a way? Because I feel like the original rights corrupted it. And there's some good people there. There's this book. Have you heard of this pastor named John Polipo? He wrote a book called Hope and Other Superpowers.
I haven't. But, you know, there's a lot of great Christian literature out there, Sam, and I share your concern. I think that Jesus has a lot of really good and important things to say, and so I'm willing to call myself a Christian. But Jerry Falwell has got nothing in common with me. Sam, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. We'll be back. It's Anything Goes Friday on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.